Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This is also external, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Please proceed and speak further on this matter. Ramananda Rai replied, to give up one's occupational duties in the Varnashram system is the essence of perfection. Purport. A Brahmana may renounce his family and accept sannyas. Others, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, may also give up their families and take to Krishna consciousness. Such renunciation is called karma tyag. By such renunciation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied. In contrast, the process of renouncing the fruits of one's activities by offering these results to Krishna is not considered uncontaminated because, although such a process implies that one recognizes Krishna as the Supreme Person, it still involves one in activities on the material platform. Since such activities are within the material universe, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered them external. To correct this, Ramananda Roy recommended that one take to the renounced order of life in order to transcend material activities. This is supported by the following verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.32, which will be covered tomorrow. But what I will say is it's from the Uddhava Gita, and Uddhava Gita is a parallel text to the Bhagavad Gita, and you often find there are parallel texts. So the famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Parichaja Mame Kam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papibhyo Moksha Yishami Ma Shuchaha, abandon all varieties of religion and surrender unto me, I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear. That has a corresponding verse in the Uddhava Gita, which we will cover tomorrow, which Krishna Dharma Prabhu will cover tomorrow. Okay, the verse again today. Prabhu kohi ihobaya agi kohara rai kohi svadharma chaga e sajasar. This is also external, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Please proceed and speak further on this matter. Ramananda Roy replied, to give up one's occupational duties in the Varnashram system is the essence of perfection. Panchatattvatvikam krishnam bhaktarupa swarupakam bhaktavataram bhaktakyam namami bhaktashaktikam jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shivasadi gaura bhaktavrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare. So it's my privilege to be here. Several Chaitanya Charitamrita classes in a month, so I'm not worthy. Please give me your blessings that I can say something inspiring, something that is in line with Siddhanta. So several days ago, Doya Baladev Prabhu gave class, and I consider it Krishna's arrangement. He referred to the first book that Prabhupada wrote, which is not published by the BBT, because it was found in a suitcase the day before Prabhupada left the planet. His devotee, Bhakti Gaurava Narasingha Swami, who's since left the planet, he had this manuscript. And for many years, he was thinking, I don't know exactly how many years, but for a considerable period of time, he was thinking not to have this distributed, not to have it published, because he figured that whatever Srila Prabhupada wanted to say about Ramananda Roy Samvad, which is the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, whatever Prabhupada wanted to say, he's already said it in the purports to this chapter. Then after a while, the desire manifested in his heart, no, I think this is very important. He was reading it over and over again, and he was thinking this is very nectarian, and he really wanted to share it with the world. So he has done that, and you can actually get it online, PDF file, for free. All you have to do is, if you Google the name of the book, which is the name that Prabhupada gave it, In Search of the Ultimate Goal of Life. So you'll find that this, what is the term in Bengali for ultimate goal? Paramgati, that's Sanskrit. I guess it's Bengali too. It's actually from this verse. Sajasar, yes, because Sajja means the goal, and Sar means the essence, right? The essential goal. Another way of saying it is Sajjera Nirnaya. That's how Lord Chaitanya spoke it to Ramananda Roy. Speak the essential goal of life. Sajjara Nirnoya. So I took a look at the book, In Search of the Ultimate Goal of Life, and I went to the section that was explaining why it was that Lord Chaitanya rejected Varnashram and why it was that Ramananda Roy offered karma tyag as the essence. Now, what's quite interesting, this section can be quite confusing, and I've been confused about this section for quite a while, and I had a sort of, it dawned on me, the reason why it's confusing. And it's to do with context. You see, many of the verses that are being discussed at the beginning of this conversation, we generally attribute these verses as expressions of pure devotional service. They're from the Bhagavad Gita. They're also from the Vishnu Purana. The first verse from the Vishnu Purana that Ramananda Roy spoke is Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Para Puman Vishnura Rajate Panta Nanyat Tat Tosha Karanam. There is no greater way to please the Absolute Personality of Godhead than to worship Him through following the occupational duties of Varnashram. This is from the Vishnu Purana. And generally speaking, we would think this verse is a manifestation, an expression of pure devotional service, because it's Vishnu Arajate, worship of Vishnu. And of course, Vishnu means for us Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Gaur Nitai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, if you live in Radha Gokulananda temple. So it's got everything. It's got the right natural occupational duty, but then it's got Arajati, Vishnu Arajati. It's the essence. What is the purpose of it? The purpose of, because Varnashram by itself is not the essence. But when you have this verse, it's got Varnashram and worship of Vishnu, then we would consider that to be essential. It is pure devotional service. I consider it to be pure devotional service. But let's take some other examples that Ramananda Roy gives. He gives Yad Karoshi, Yad Ashnasi, Yad Stujasi Tapasya, Yad Tapasyasi Kauntiya, Tat Karushva Madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do those as an offering to me. Once again, this is the perfection of life. If every single thing you are doing is service to Krishna, then that's essential. Isn't that not pure devotional service? It is. In one sense, it is. Sarvadharma Parichaya verse, that is also pure devotional service because it's giving up all of the dharmas and then accepting Mami Kam Sharanam Braja, surrender to Krishna. That is another essential verse of the Bhagavad Gita. But as we see in this conversation, Mahaprabhu rejects them all as external. So we have to understand verses have a context. So you can look at a verse from what is the pure devotional purport, and you can look at it as what is potentially ambiguous about this verse. And the reason why Mahaprabhu rejects those verses is due to this ambiguity. And I discovered this when I was reading this book by Prabhupada, which was discovered. Quite a mystery, you know. Discovered it the day before he left the planet, in search of the ultimate goal of life. So here's some of the things that Prabhupada says about Varnashram, which is the first thing that was rejected. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Personality of Godhead declares that the Varnashram system is created by Him, although He is aloof from such system. Because the Varnashram system is a creation of the Personality of Godhead, it is not possible to do away with it. However, the nefarious activities of the people of the age of Kali can jeopardize the Varnashram system. We have purposely used the word jeopardized because the whole system still exists but in a reflected form. In the Varnashram system of social management, the aim of life is to attain the favor of Lord Vishnu, the all-pervading personality of Godhead. Unfortunately, at the present moment, the aim of life is to displease the all-pervading Godhead and thereby suffer perpetually under the laws of material nature. The goal of Varnashram system is to peacefully perform the prescribed duties of humanity and thereby achieve the highest success, namely the favor of Lord Vishnu. But when the aim of life is the planned exploitation of material nature, All life is jeopardized on account of the human race fighting with the laws of nature. He's going to say more, but I'll pause there. So what was the reason Prabhupada gives that Lord Chaitanya is rejecting Varnashram? What is the problem with Varnashram as expressed in those two paragraphs? Anyone? Antaranga Prabhu. We have a mic just now coming.
Hare Krishna. I would say due to the reason that the Varnashram system may be misunderstood, misinterpreted, and kind of not truly understood as what is the real means and the goals of Varnashram.
Thank you. Yes. It says, Prabhupada said, we have purposely used the word jeopardized because the whole system still exists, but in a reflected form. So it's a reflected form. So here's the next question. What's the difference between the real form and the reflected form? In the next paragraph, Prabhupada talks about a certain material tendency that manifests in the reflected form, which isn't supposed to be there. Yes. Yes, that is what it said. It says the purpose is to displease. And in particular, there's a word that Prabhupada used to describe a mentality which is displeasing. And it's the opposite to service. Lording over, exploitation is the word Prabhupada uses. So we see here, in this particular statement, he's not saying the Varnashram system itself isn't pure and perfect. But what he's saying is it is misunderstood. People tend to use it in an exploitative way, which therefore nullifies the actual essence of the system. Therefore, the system he describes it as being jeopardized. So I'll read some more of what he says. And this is I'm just taking little segments from this book. Varna is a little section called Varna and Ashram Rejected. So Prabhupada continues. Thus, Lord Chaitanya rejected Ramananda's proposal because in the age of Kali, the Varnashram Dharma is so degraded that any attempt to restore it to its original position will be hopeless. He also rejected Varnashram Dharma because it has no value in relation to pure devotional service. The second, more important consideration is that even if the Varnashram system is observed strictly, it still cannot help one to rise to the highest plane of transcendental service to the Lord. So, some more reasons are given here. So, can anyone give me some of the points that Prabhupada made here that give more reason why he rejects Varnashram? There's two or three. Yes, Prabhuji. Correct, yes. The second, the more important consideration is that even if the Varnashram system is observed strictly, it still cannot help one to rise to the highest plane of transcendental service. And there was another reason in this that Prabhupada gives. It's more of a pragmatic one. He says, the age of Kali is so degraded that any attempt to restore it to its original position will be hopeless. Which is quite an astonishing statement, because elsewhere in Prabhupada's teachings, he says he wants the Varnashram system established. You see? So we have to try and accommodate these two statements. The way I accommodate it is there's a slimmed down version of Varnashram called Daivi Varnashram. It's not the same as the full blown Varnashram, and that system can actually be implemented, although it's still difficult. So I'll give you another few things that Prabhupada says. Although the aim of Varnashram Dharma is to satisfy the all-pervading God Vishnu, it does not explicitly mention devotional service rendered directly to the personality of Godhead. Without being specifically engaged in devotional service, even the proper performance of Varnashram Dharma may lead one to accept either the impersonal or personal feature of Godhead. Impersonal realization of the absolute truth will mar the progress of devotional service. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya did not wish to risk the human life in that way, and thus he rejected Varnashram Dharma as external. So there's one very clear point made there. Anyone like to offer? What's the point that Prabhupada's making here? There's two approaches to Varnashram. Yes. See, it's the proper application of Varnashram Dharma is to cultivate the personal feature of the Supreme, which is why, if you notice, the conversation goes from a discussion of Varnashram to Yad Karoshi Yadash Nase. That verse is better. Prabhupada explained that as a better verse because it more tangibly expresses a relationship with a person. You're offering to Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada said that is higher than the Varnashrama Charavata verse, but he still says it's still a little vague, therefore it is also to be rejected. So Varnashrama, it can take you two ways. You can become impersonal or personal. Now here's something that's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in connection with that. Because I remember I mentioned the verse, it has the term Vishnu Arajati. It's very clear, right? How can it be any confusion? Well, there is a confusion, and Prabhupada explains it as follows. Sometimes materialists consider Lord Vishnu a material conception. Impersonalists think that above Lord Vishnu is the impersonal Brahman. The impersonalists misunderstand the worship of Lord Vishnu. They worship Lord Vishnu to merge into his body. In order that Vishnu Aradhana is not misunderstood, Sri Chaitanya requested that Sri Ramananda Roy proceed further and clear up the issue. So we see the potential ambiguity here. Vishnu Aradhana, worship of Vishnu, it can mean many things to many people. And if you have an impersonal leaning, then you can think of, I am worshipping Vishnu in order to attain Brahman. The formless Brahman is the ultimate goal, and I'm worshipping Vishnu for that purpose. This is what Prabhupada calls worship of philosophical Vishnu. You heard this phrase before? He talks about philosophical Vishnu. So generally in Hinduism, we have Panchopasana, worship of five deities. What are the five deities? Anyone like to offer? Durga, Ganesh, Shiva, Vishnu, Surya, yeah, that's right. Sometimes they have a different five, sometimes Brahma's included. But these are the five, and I've mentioned this before, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he conceptualized those five in a way of advancement of knowledge. And he said that worship of Durga was the first step, and he compared that to the material scientists who are manipulating matter, but they don't think of where it comes from. They may be very expert at manipulating matter, but they don't think where is the source. To think of the source, that is, Surya is the source of energy. Sun is the source of energy, therefore that is a higher type of worship. One is thinking beyond matter and thinking where it comes from. And beyond that, humanitarianism, Ganapati. Ganapati means Lord of the Masses. The Ganapachas, they are humanitarian. They actually start helping people, which is a step further than scientific knowledge, which is not helping people. It's not directly helping people. Higher than that is the Shaivites, because they have a conception of the Jiva. And higher still is Vishnu, because not only is there the conception of the Jiva, but there's also the conception of Paramatma, or Vishnu, the super soul, you see. That is why knowledge goes upwards. It's your type of knowledge. Within any type of knowledge, you can become expert. Like, for example, Prabhupada explained that the material scientists are like vultures. The idea being vulture has very good eyesight, but its business is to find the corpse. So its mentality is low, but it's very good at doing that, you see. So those scientists that can invent the atomic bomb, they're very, very elevated in terms of very skilled. Kriti is the word Prabhupada used. But when it's used for the wrong purpose, and some of the scientists, they weren't using it for the wrong purpose, but the people that got hold of it did. Duskriti means to misuse kriti. Duskriti means the demons, their skill is misused, you see. So philosophical Vishnu refers to those who are part of this Panchopasana. They're worshipping in a different way because they're thinking merging into the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate goal of life. And Vishnu is just a stepping stone for that. That's a very offensive mentality. You're using Vishnu, you're thinking Vishnu is an illusion. It's just a form, it's not real. But the purpose behind it is to obtain the impersonal Brahman. Archivishnu Shiladi Yashiva Naraki Saha. To consider the Archavigraha to be stone, that is an aparad. It is very bad for one's devotional life. You should understand that this is none other than Krishna himself. Shri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Shri Sri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Sri Gauritai Ki Jai. So I discussed the Varnashram and Yad Karoshi Yadashnasi verse. But let's take a look at this verse, Sarva Dharma Prichaja. We consider this to be the essential teaching of Bhagavad Gita, where all other dharmas are rejected, and one just does the one thing, which is surrender to Krishna. That is, we all often describe this as being like the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Narad Muni, in the first canto, he says, Chaktva svadharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajanna pakvo tapatet tato yadi yatra kvaba vadram abhuda mushikam kovata apto bhajatam svadharma taha. If one gives up one's material duties and worships the Supreme, but then due to immaturity later falls down, where is the loss? On the other hand, if one perfectly performs on material duties but does not worship the Supreme, what is the benefit? Very profound statement of Narad Muni explaining, actually, all other dharmas are subservient to the one dharma which is worshipping the Supreme. And this is what is encapsulated in this famous verse, Sarva Dharma Parichaja. So the question we then ask, what is wrong with that? What is incomplete about that verse? Because this is what Ramananda Roy is stating. He's saying karma tyag, and he's going to quote this verse. And I don't want to jump ahead, but what is essentially wrong with that verse? Potentially wrong. As I say, it's about context. You can look at a verse from its positive and from its potential ambiguity. There's an ambiguity in this verse. Yes, Vishal Prabhu.
People may think renunciation means to give up the activities completely.
Yeah.
But you can actually mean renouncing just the fruits, results, the activities.
I mean, renunciation, when one renounces the fruits of one's activity, that is a good thing. When we talk about two benefits of renunciation, why do people perform activities? One reason is there is a material motive. Like if you're a brahmana, you perform brahminical activities. Some of them are not essentially Vaishnava activities, but you're attached to them. You're attached to certain activities. If you're a kshatriya or a vaishya or shudra, you have a certain attachment. And because you have this material attachment, which is a covering of the soul, you're given a set of activities which are helpful to stabilize you. But because that whole system is based on the false identity, I am this body, I am this mind, that these false coverings, for that reason, is external. Therefore, Sarvadharma Prichaja is an improvement because you're giving up all that. But what's lacking is there's no positive description of what that devotional service is. So Krishna tells Arjuna, Sarvadharma Prichaja, Mame kam sharanam braja, come to me, surrender to me. But then one may ask, well, what is surrender? What exactly is it? Are there activities involved in surrender? And of course there are. There's Nava Vida Bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service. You don't find these nine processes delineated in the Bhagavad Gita. You'll find them delineated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's often said that this, where the Bhagavad Gita finishes, Sarva Dharma Prichaja, the Srimad Bhagavatam begins. Dharma Prajita Kaitavo Tra. We herein kick out all varieties of cheating religion. So Dharma Prajita Kaitavo Tra, that is the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's also where the Bhagavad Gita ends. The Bhagavad Gita ends saying, kick out all religion, but then that's the 16th chapter. There's not another chapter, right? The description is not there. So what's lacking is one could give up all material dharma, but then not engage in devotional service because there's nothing specifically mentioned about it. And so what Prabhupada explains, he places this verse at the kind of borderline between the spiritual and material world. And he explains a region called Viraja. In fact, I'll read it here if I can find it. The river Viraja is outside the boundary of the material world, where there is no disturbance from the three modes of nature. The material world is the creation of the external energy of Godhead, and Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, is the creation of the internal energy of Godhead. Viraja is situated between the material and the spiritual world. It is outside the boundary of both the material and the spiritual world. However, renunciation without any positive engagement is imperfect and cannot give the candidate the desired result of love of God. You see? So, in the context of this conversation, as far as Mahaprabhu is concerned, it's not a positive engagement. You've said what it isn't, you've said not material, but you haven't fully entered the spiritual world because the spiritual activities are not delineated, you see. So that's how Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, they describe this. And what's interesting is, in this context, this is Ramananda Roy, when he wants to improve upon that, he's going to give another improved answer. And his improved answer is Jnana Mishra Bhakti. So he's introduced the Bhakti, but there's Jnana Mishra mixed with knowledge. So that's, if you consider that the way that Mahaprabhu is looking at this verse and the way that Ramananda Roy is looking at it is the opposite to the way we normally look at this verse with Bhagavad Gita. Because the normal understanding is we have a chapter, Jnana Yoga, you know, Jnana Mishra Bhakti, but then the 18th chapter, we're giving it all up, we're giving up Jnana, and we're just going to surrender to Krishna, Sarva Dharma Pricchaja. So we're giving up Jnana Mishra Bhakti and we're accepting pure Bhakti. That's the normal way we look at this verse. That's just why this conversation is unusual. It's now flipped the other way around. No, this is Jnana Mishra. Sarva Dharma Pricchaja is Jnana Mishra Bhakti because you haven't properly described. And as I mentioned the last time I gave class, the first answer that Mahaprabhu is satisfied with that says, yes, this is good, is Jnane prayasam udapasyanamanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiyavartam stane satashitik sutikitam tanavan manobhya ye prayasho jitajito pyasi taistri lokyam. One should give up all jnan and just surrender to Krishna through hearing his pastimes. And you can do that stane sitaha, remaining in whatever occupation you hold. So if you're in the Varnashram system, which is what we're supposed to be, you just stay wherever you are, whatever varna, whatever ashram you're in. There's no need to change. You just hear. And then, you prayaso jitajito pyasi taistri lokam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's known as Ajit, unconquerable, he becomes conquered. So that is, when Ramananda Roy spoke this, then Mahaprabhu, he's now experiencing this bhava, this ecstasy. Yes, now we're talking. Now, there's a famous verse of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that describes, in a nutshell, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And if you know it, please join in with me. Harajo Bhagavan Braje Shatanayas Taddhama Brindavanam Ramya Kachadupasana Brajabadu Vargena Yakalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumarta Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhar Matamidam Tatradara Na Paraha. Which means Lord Chaitanya had no other, adara means like respect. He had no other respect, ultimately, to anything other than the following teachings. The first one, Arajo Bhagavan Brajesha. Brajesha means Krishna of Vrindavan. Notice how Mahaprabhu, his worship of Krishna, his worship of Vishnu, is not just the worship of Vishnu, it's worship of Krishna, but it's also Krishna from Vrindavan, not Dwarka Krishna, not Mathuranath. So Raja Bhagavan Brajesha. The word Brajesha means it's Krishna of Vrindavan. And then Brajesha Tanaya, Tadama, Brajesha Tanaya means Brajesha means Nanda Maharaj, and Brajesha Tanaya means the son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna. And then Tadama Vrindavanam. His abode is equally worshipable. So Mahaprabhu his whole mood is Anyara Ridoya Mana, Mora Mana Vrindavan, Mani Vani Ika Korijani. For others, their mind is their heart, but for me, my mind is Vrindavan. Mahaprabhu said this, my mind is Vrindavan. So Vrindavan consciousness is one of the essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And Jahantumi se Vrindavan. Wherever the pure devotee is, that is Vrindavan. But Vrindavan is carried within the heart. So Mahaprabhu's conception is Vrindavan Krishna is, and his abode is worshipable. And then of the those that worship Krishna, the best are the gopis, the Brajabadhu. That is the highest form of worship. Ramya Kachirupasana Brajabadhu Vargena Yakalpita. He considers the worship of the gopis to be the highest. After that, Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam. The highest form of proof, highest evidence is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prema Pumarto Mahan, the ultimate goal of life. Remember, we're talking here, this whole chapter is about the ultimate goal of life, is Prema. So if we consider all these things, they very much apply to this conversation. Because when Ramananda Roy starts to churn the nectar, he's quoting the Vrindavan pastimes of Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate proof. Brajendra Nandana Krishna is the ultimate form of worship. And in the process of describing these verses, he glorifies the gopis and their form of worship, because that is the highest. And therefore, all the elements of this verse, they're all contained within this chapter. And of course, the original question, Sajasar, if we're going to ask, what is the answer, Sajasar, what is the ultimate goal of life? The answer is Prema, Prema Pramarto Mahan. Prema is the highest. But how it's presented is it's quite astonishing, because as Ramananda Roy speaking, Mahaprabhu says, go further, go further. And at one point, Ramananda Roy, he summarizes all the things that he's been saying. And what are the different tattvas that he's been describing? Krishna tattva, he describes the glories of Krishna. Radha tattva, the glories of Radharani, which is even higher. Rasa tattva, the exchange. Prema tattva, the love between the two and the gopis. Leela tattva, the pastimes of the Radha Krishna Leela with the gopis. This is all extremely elevated, and we're not actually allowed to enter into this conversation. And as I mentioned several weeks ago, in the Gaudiya Math, there was a rule that you couldn't actually read the second half of this chapter. Even very senior devotees. There were some devotees, they were allowed to read the more intimate pastimes. But this particular chapter was considered very, very elevated, especially the second half. So that's a nice mood that we should all have. We should think, I cannot approach this, but at the same time, Srila Prabhupada has instructed we should read all his books, and therefore we're going to go through this chapter. We don't think that we're higher than these wonderful devotees of the Gaudiya Math. Because if you remember, in the whole of India, there was something like not that many number of disciples, like several thousand, don't know exactly how many, maybe 5,000 disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So there's not very many out of this, considering how large India is. Not very many followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, so we have the cream of the cream of Indian spiritual people who are gravitating towards this great personality who, by all accounts, was so powerful, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was so powerful that he could have actually brought together all the different branches of Hinduism under him. He had such gravity, such prowess, but instead he didn't want to. He took a different path. He said, I want to keep it small and pure. I'm not going to adulterate it with any other practices. We're not going to do yata mat tata pat, anything and everything. We're going to keep the Siddhanta very strict. And if that means a smaller amount of people, that's fine. And who did the same? Srila Prabhupada. He once said, I could have had many followers if I hadn't given you all these rules and regs. But he gave these four regs, very strict regs. If you want to be my disciple, you have to follow those regs. There were other gurus going around the West at the time, and they did not have such strict requirements. But Prabhupada said, keep it pure. Purity is the force. We're going to keep it pure. People come. The right people will come. Because he compared finding devotees to like selling diamonds. He said, there aren't many customers. Diamonds are so expensive. There are not many customers. But that's our product. So you can't do anything about that. Our product is very pure. So if we're not going to dilute it for anyone and everyone. So that is it's an important teaching that we have to remember. And of course we do bridge preach. We can make it easier for people. But in terms of philosophy, ultimately, we keep it very, very strict. And that way, purity is the force. So here's the next question. So we've been discussing Varnashram, and it's very much rejected as external in this part. But let's now look at it, Varnashram, from a different angle of vision. It's also something that's very prominent in our teachings. It is something that Prabhupada wanted. The purposes of ISKCON is to establish a more natural way of life. And Prabhupada, towards the end of his life, he said, famously said, half my work is unfinished. I want to establish Varnashram. So the question we would then ask is, given that he's already said here that you cannot revive Varnashram, he said it's external, it's vague, he's given all these things that he said about Varnashram, it's material, it's not pure devotional service, why then is he so strong in his desire to implement it? So let's now look at the other side of it. Prayojana Prabhu, who's got the mic?
Walk on this, where he discusses this in two aspects. The morning walk, March 14th, 1974, Vrindavan, and it's a very special thing because he explains it. It's not only for the devotees, but it's for the karmis. In that he said we could actually invite them to our colleges and discuss and actually show them the system of Varnashram based on the qualities of the persons that must be in power. So what he was looking at was to ensure that it's for the benefit of society as well as the ideals for Krishna consciousness, that you know who you are, you know what you're doing, and you know how to do it, and that you're qualified, whether you be in karmi life or in devotional life.
Thank you.
So it's that morning walk where he discusses it, and he says, we will open this college and invite them to discuss this so that they can have a better society. The society will be conducive for everyone, you know. So it's a really wonderful lecture.
Thank you.
On that morning walk.
It's interesting. You know, you just reminded me of some other thing that's in the book, The Search for the Ultimate Goal of Life. Prabhupada says that the laws of material nature are very stringent, and there's a little section entitled Mother Nature's Atomic Bomb, it's called. And what Prabhupada is saying is the scientists, they think they have invented this atomic bomb and they're very proud of their invention, but actually this is the scheme of Mother Nature, and she will use this to punish those who do not follow the stringent laws of nature, the laws of God. So the exploitative system where we're all just trying to get something for ourselves. This is an unnatural system, and this is what leads to war, pestilence, famine, etc. Whereas the Varnashram system, because it's not exploitative, it is based on the Virat Rup conception of life. Now, the Virat Rup conception of Godhead, is not the highest conception of God, but the service attitude is there. So the Brahmanas are the head, the Kshatriyas are the arms, the Shudras are the feet or the legs, and the Vaishyas are the belly. So if you think of our body functions harmoniously. We all, our hands, our feet, our stomach, and our head are all working cooperatively so that we can exist nicely because we arrange it that way. In the same way, social system must be done in a cooperative way where all the system, all the varnas and ashrams work together. The opposite of that, exploitative, and we've seen it right now. We're seeing like one nation has just invaded another European nation in order to exploit. That is contrary to Varnashram. And Prabhupada very ominously says, because of this exploitative mentality, that is, that there will be war and the atomic bomb will be used. I don't want to spook you here because there's a lot of fear right now about the proliferation of nuclear weapons and we're in a very unstable time. But it's interesting that Prabhupada talks about this problem so many years ago. But thank you for your comments. A couple of other comments on Varnashram. There was a couple over here. By the way, my experience of Saturday mornings is if we leave early, it's usually prasad isn't served till 9 o'clock. It tends to be late the last couple of times. So what I plan to do is I'll finish at 1:45 and I'll take questions. But if you want to leave early, I don't think prasad will be served until 9 o'clock, but it might be. Karen. Yes. Yeah. Ideology or way of government system. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Yes, we have to be careful when we look at Prabhupada quotes, because there are some other quotes that kind of go against. And as you pointed out, Prabhupada said the Sankirtan movement can avert war. So Prabhupada, some places he says, they have made these atomic weapons, therefore they will surely use them. And sometimes he says, you know, the war will begin, it'll start between a war between India and Pakistan. He says this way. There's one purport where Prabhupada says, they're thinking they can use these bombs to destroy the world, but they cannot do so because it has to be sanctioned by Krishna. Krishna's the supreme controller. So if there is some catastrophe, then it has to be sanctioned by Krishna. And as devotees, we see it as this is Krishna. It's Krishna's plan, whatever that may be. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, they'd have to leave some people. Yeah. Thank you.
To your point about one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada wants to establish Varnashram, I've heard that one of them is it's something that his spiritual master also set out to do as one of his missions. Mm. And so Srila Prabhupada was fulfilling that desire.
Thank you. It's another angle. Anything else?
Prabhupada wasn't so much concerned about establishing Varnashram. But then when he saw his disciples struggling with their mind and senses,
yes,
then he thought, yeah, this is important. We've got to establish Varnashram.
Mm.
Varnashram puts you in a peaceful state of mind, like goodness.
Yeah.
And then practicing devotional service is very easy. Well, it's very difficult. Without being put in a situation where you're able to develop more goodness. And that's why Varnashram.
Yes.
Helped us come to that point.
Yes, Prabhupada, he was experimenting. Have you noticed that? We look at Prabhupada, and I remember this one interesting conversation Prabhupada is explaining. When I first came to the West, I thought, let me make some sannyasis. Then he said, then I realized I couldn't. He said, okay, let them get married, then have one son. Their families can live in Vrindavan, and then they can preach. And he goes, I also realized I could not do that otherwise, other as well. So he was adjusting. So when he first came, and he had this idea, Varnashram, that is, he wants a society of brahmanas to lead society, very strong, powerful personalities, and society would be based on Varnashram system. They would follow the brahmanas that Prabhupada had made. And as time went on, he realized these brahmanas are not so good, some of them. They're not as brahminical as I hoped. Then he thought, no, this Varnashram, this is for devotees as well. Because originally he was saying, Varnashram is not for ISKCON, it's for the people that follow, the people in general. But he ended up saying, no, everyone has to do. Because it's practical. He looked at the quality and he realized it's not working. People are, although everything is in the holy name, they still, my disciples, are not actually coming to that platform. And then due to disturbance of not being properly situated in their varna and ashram, they are becoming disturbed. So then he said that way. So here's an interesting 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's indirectly referring to varna ashram as well. Because in this chapter, if we remember, Krishna's giving his instructions on devotional service to Arjuna, and he gives a collection of instructions, and each instruction is the next one down from the previous one, you see. So he begins by saying, Maeva mana adatsva, mai buddham naveshaya, neva shishyasi maeva, ata urva mashanshaya. Just fix your mind upon me and engage your intelligence in me, thus you will come to me without fail. Right? That is actually Krishna consciousness. There's no mention there of sadhana. Sadhana, something that we're very much absorbed in, but there's no mention of sadhana in that verse. Sadhana comes in the next verse. Ata chitam samadatum na shaknosi maistiram, abhyasa yoga yuktina mami chaktum dananjaya. If you cannot just fix your mind upon me, then engage in your sadhana bhakti, activities of devotional service. Abhyasa yoga is what it's called. So abhyasa yoga means let's structure our life. So if we say, for example, let's chant 16 rounds a day, we're regulating ourselves, and that is how we will develop mami chaptam dananjaya. You will develop a desire. If the desire is not there at the beginning, we develop it through sadhana. And if you can't do that, you work for me. Now we're in the realm of Varnashram Dharma. You work for Krishna. Give your fruits to Krishna. You're part of a whole scheme. You may not wish to chant Hare Krishna. You may be a marshal. You may be administrative class. You may be a vaishya. You may be a farmer, banker. You may just be a servant. You may not want to chant Hare Krishna, but you should at least respect those that are doing so, and you should follow the Varnashram system that is laid down by that spiritual authority. That is Varnashram. And then if you don't want to do that, because Prabhupada gives the example, sometimes you do family, you know, complications. One cannot even donate the proceeds of one's work to Krishna. Imagine that. You can't even give to Krishna. Then he says, give to a good cause. You know, if you give to open up a hospital, it's mundane, but it will prime your consciousness. Your consciousness will become more receptive. So when you do receive the bhakti, you'll be able to make more of it because you're more compassionate, you see. So there's a purpose to everything. And I will finish just by giving you an analogy. So there's a branch of science, geotechnics. So the geotechnic, it's all about looking at soil analysis. So for example, when you're building structures, you have a foundation and you have to know how much load the foundation will take. So you've got to know how strong the soil is, the soil bearing capacity. So in order to analyze soil, it's a very complicated subject, but one thing that scientists do is they take the soil and they have like a little sieve. It's a very large sieve, and they put the soil on top and they shake it. And then the large particles, they don't go through the sieve. And below that, they have a smaller sieve. So the less larger particles, some of the bigger ones, they stay on the second level, but some smaller ones go through. And you have a third sieve, which is a little bit smaller. And this way you can grade your soil as like, well, so much percent is this size, and some of the particles are this size. And just by analyzing that, you can actually say a lot about the soil, how much it will absorb water, how much it will expand, how much it is likely to hold when you put load on it, if it's going to remain or whether it's going to start moving, etc. So if you consider the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's, he's kind of like doing the same thing. He's got these sieves. He's saying, well, do this. And well, I can't. Okay, you go down to the next level. Do this. And you see, let's shake it. Who can manage? Who cannot? Some people can, some people can't. And by doing that, he's stratified human nature, human beings into the different categories. And he's found a nice system for everyone. You see, because Krishna consciousness is ultimately for everyone. Therefore, it doesn't matter how fallen we are. There's always some position we can tune in. You see? So because the 12th chapter is for everyone, that means Varnashram is a significant part, and for most people, it actually is important. So on that note, I will stop, and thank you very much for your time. Please excuse my imperfections, and I'll open up for any comments and questions, or if you're all satisfied. Yes?
Thank you, Prabhu. Wonderful class.
Thank you.
I would just say that the reason why we actually still didn't do much in regard of Varnashrama, because one thing, maybe we don't take Prabhupada too seriously, like old school goes, like in the beginning didn't insist, but then later did. Another one is too difficult. it's much more easier to invest to become pure devotee than to create Varnashram, really. And it's too much hassle if you want to do both. It hampers each other. You know, like you just cannot. When you enter into the mode of passion, you cannot just focus on your spiritual life fully.
Really?
So the reason why we don't have it, and we will not have in our lifetime, most probably, is because it's much easier to concentrate on your practice. And then let us see, byproduct of it, maybe one shama, maybe not, but that's the reason why we don't take too seriously. Because you have to really put yourself out and create something which Prabhupada wanted, which may hamper your own spiritual life.
Yes. And I'll just say one, pass it on to Antaranga Prabhu. I'll just say one thing on that. This is an example of how certain elements of Varnashram may be unfavorable for our practice devotional service where we currently are at. And on the flip side, the whole point of Varnashram is to do the exact opposite of that, right? To find a system where it is natural and easier for us to perform devotional service. So when we have that dilemma, then that indicates something's not right, because the thing that's supposed to help us, we're thinking this is a hindrance, you see. Now, for some people, if they're so absorbed in pure devotional service, then for them that is a hindrance. But there should be a class of devotee who's very expert at expanding the teachings of our acharyas, following them and still being fixed up in devotional service, right? And to not do so would be falgu viragya, or false renunciation. Because if we accept that this varnashram is necessary, then because it is necessary, there must be a way to do it that isn't going to spoil our own spiritual life. But thank you. It is. I know exactly what you mean by that, because I feel the same way. It's a lot easier to chant Hare Krishna. It's a lot easier to go on the street and chant Hare Krishna than it is to purchase a farm or to try and start, set up a military, so it's all this kind of varnashram thing. Antaranga Prabhu.
I have slightly different opinion on this whole matter.
Okay.
And in a sense that I would personally say that Varnashram as such fully exists, but we are not able to accept it.
Mm.
Because all of us, we have natures, sometimes mixed natures. Most of us are in that section of being mixed, like someone with Brahmanas, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Shudras, everything, one big Khichri.
Mm.
But Khichri. It already exists. There is a class of people which are naturally workers. There is a class of people which are naturally maintaining the lands or dealing with money.
Mm-hmm.
The natural inclination of person is already there.
Yes.
Because it's a creation of Krishna. It cannot disappear.
Mm.
It will not disappear. Just like the nature of the soul is always to be pleasure seeking. So that will never disappear. So Varnashram system never disappears as such. But we are lacking in my opinion, we are just lacking the knowledge to say, yes, this is my predominant feature, this is my predominant nature, and I'm able and I wish to follow. And the ultimate presentation for validity of Varnashram is actually happiness. Because if you're naturally Vaishya predominant, and if you engage yourself in those activities, you will become much more happy and satisfied. And the reason why people in this world are unhappy, unsatisfied, is because they don't have the power and the strength to follow their predominant feature.
Mm-hmm.
So it exists,
mm-hmm.
but the modern society blocks it. It's just blocked.
Yes.
That's just...
Thank you. So what you said reminds me of last Saturday's class. Sri Prahlad was giving class, and he talked about the conversation between Prabhupada and Professor Katovsky. And Prabhupada's point to Professor Katovsky was, this Varnashram system, it's already there, and it's already in Russia. It's already in Russia. You have an intelligentsia. You have intelligent people in Russia. You'll also have administrative class. So it's a natural, it's present everywhere. And my additional comment is, and it's there in the exploitative feature. It is the type of Varnashram which is going to lead to the use of atomic bombs, because it's not done in the service of Krishna. And so our goal, our position should be, as you said, it's already there. Will you see it? People that themselves will also see it just by looking at the natures around them. And we just have to then we have to put it under worship of Krishna. If we can introduce worship of Krishna, then that system which is already existing will go from being Asuric Varnashram to Daivi Varnashram, and that is when it becomes natural, and that's when all nature's calamities do not happen. You see, all the reactions we get in this world is because although the Varnashram system is there, it's there in an Asuric form, in a reflected form, and that's the problem. So yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to say one more thing before we finish. I've noticed something, because there are two ways to look at Varnashram. We see sometimes devotees, they give up all other duties and focus on devotional service. And later on, they do actually fall down, but then they don't revive the duties that they used to have, right? So there's a verse in the 11th canto that is a good advice to such people. It goes, Tavad karmani kurvita na nirvajeta yavata mat katau shravana yadau strada yavan na jayati. As long as one has not given up material propensities, and as long as one has not developed faith in Krishna Katha, one should continue to perform one's duties. So, if you consider this, if someone takes to Krishna consciousness and then gives up other duties, for example, maybe they don't look after their family members, or maybe they have a... One time Prabhupada said, you can earn a living by hook or crook. Point is, if you're engaged in devotional service, then we're not going to worry about how your occupation. Other times he says it's good to have a respectable occupation. It's better, but it's not essential. So sometimes devotees, because they're engaged in devotional service, they don't do other dutiful things. They don't give in charity if it's a mundane cause, etc. There's so many things they don't do. And then if later on they then fall away from devotional service, they continue not to give to mundane charity because they keep all these instructions. They don't look after their family members because they're thinking everything else is mundane, but at the same time they're not engaged in transcendental service to the Lord. That is someone who's slipped through the net. You have to choose your dharma. If you're not going to do para dharma, you have to do the other one. And if you don't, you're going to get a reaction, you see. So it's very important that if someone does, for some reason, move away from devotional service, they should engage in charitable activities, they should look after, or as it says in the 11th canto, Devarshi bhutaptan rinam pitrinam na kinkaro nayam rine charajam savatmanaya sharanam sharanyam gatomukundam paririchikartam. If you fully surrender to Mukunda, then you're absolved from your debt to the devas, the rishis, Buddha, living entities in general. Like even bees, we have a debt to bees if we eat honey. You know, we have a debt to the trees, that produce fruit. We have a debt to the rishis who've given us spiritual teachings, the devas, the demigods who've given us rain, sunlight, etc. Pit trees, forefathers, they establish a society. We're born into a working society. We have like books of knowledge. We have teachers. We have classes, we have educational, we have doctors, so many things we have. That debt, we all have that debt. If we engage in pure devotional service, that debt is covered. We don't have to separately try and, you know, pay back that debt. But if we fall away from devotional service, then let's not forget the debt we still have to these different personalities, different living entities. Hare Krishna. Anyone else like to add anything? I think it's time. I'm only keeping you long because I just haven't convinced that Prasad isn't ready. Okay. We'll soon find out. We're about to find out. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Haribol.